Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, a talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network. Remember, go to my website, TotalTutor.org, for more information. Well, I get really excited when I interview authors from the Miami Book Fair, especially children's book authors, because, again, I have four children of my own. I'm a passionate teacher who really enjoys, and this book is such an interesting topic. It's based on a true story also. I want to welcome the program author Linda Burgess and illustrator Maggie Dunlap. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Hi. Good to be with you, Neil. Thanks for having us.
Oh, you're welcome. It's an honor to be on the show with you guys and talk about Mount Vernon's magnificent menagerie and the very mysterious guest. And I'm very excited because of the whole situation with the story about George Washington's animals. I never learned about that, and I have an undergrad in history. That's very surprising.
Yeah, well, and we thought that this would be a good story to introduce children to George Washington and get them interested in history, because all kids can relate to animals.
Oh, definitely they can, and it's a situation where then they can really build that connection towards George Washington in ways as well. And so, Maggie, I'm looking at the illustration. It's really cool, the beginning and all the pictures in it. So who's really has the big love for George Washington, yourself, Linda, or Maggie?
I've always been very interested in history. Growing up, it was my favorite subject in school. And living in Virginia, being so close to so much history, Williamsburg, Yorktown, Jamestown, Mount Vernon, I've always had a huge interest in history and George Washington.
Well, absolutely. It seems like there was a lot of history even for a children's book on this, Linda, wasn't there?
Yes, there was. In fact, the idea came through Mount Vernon itself, and actually one specific woman, Lynn Gammel, who is was at the time vice regent for the Mount Vernon Ladies Association, who had seen one of Maggie's earlier books that she had illustrated for the Mississippi Museum of Art called The Four Dog Blues Band, and thought, oh, this is exactly what Mount Vernon needs. To get children involved. And lo and behold, they really didn't have a children's book specifically about Mount Vernon. So they asked Maggie if she would illustrate, and I raised my hand and said, and I'll write it. And I had to work with Mary Thompson, who was their historian, to make sure that we got the facts right. In fact, every single animal that shows up in the book actually lived at Mount Vernon with George Washington at one time or another, though not at the same time. So the animals lived there over a period of about 30 years. I brought them all together to weave a story based on true events that really did happen, in a fictional sense of putting them all together on one single day with the arrival of a very mysterious guest that came to Mount Vernon for the holiday season.
So, Maggie, I guess the whole situation of working with your mom, that must have been pretty cool to get to do a book with her.
Yeah, it was wonderful. It was great. We were working, she was working on the story, and so I had the author right there to give me inspiration for what the characters in the story were going to be like and what they could look like. And my mom's also an artist, so we were kind of, you know, working together, and she was helping me a lot.
And I'm sure, Linda, it was a joy to see that your daughter's success as an illustrator, and to be able to write the book with her and work hand in hand with you doing the research, Linda, probably both of you, and then coming up with, okay, here are the animals. Now, how can we spin a story together so the kids are really interested, right?
Well, absolutely. And I'll tell you what actually made it happen was the fact that Maggie had asked to be homeschooled for her sophomore year in high school. And it gave her the time to spend from January through April of this year, of 2012, to devote the time and the effort towards the illustrations. I don't know that she'd been able to have done it had she been enrolled in the regular school day, but homeschooling afforded her the time and the means to get it done. And so it was really nice to work with her. She was very diligent about getting it done, and came up with these characters. The looks and the expressions on the illustrations really brings life to the characters, such as Vulcan, who was a French foxhound, who kind of is the lead character in the story. And Vulcan was actually a gift from the Marquis de Lafayette to George Washington. And then there's a character, a Dalmatian, that George Washington had by the name of Sweet Lips, who's kind of the little love interest between Vulcan and the Dalmatian. And there's an ox by the name of Old Duke. There was actually an ox that George Washington had, some of his house pets. And then, of course, the mysterious guest that arrives at the end of the book.
And I guess, Maggie, it's an amazing thing that, again, you were in high school while doing this. I mean, that's the yes. talent that you have is amazing. And so thank do you plan on doing more illustrations of books after this?
Yeah, I plan on pursuing art, fine art and illustration, and probably keep on doing art and keep on homeschooling till college.
And then after that, go in your career in college and look at this. And it's very interesting, I guess, the whole homeschooling atmosphere as well, showing how well-rounded Maggie is, Linda. And that's a good testament to specifically another choice of school, so that some people just at homeschool ends up being a great option. So with all the animals, Linda, you really were so surprised, probably after you did the research, that how much George Washington loved animals and was involved in animals, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. He had, if you asked George Washington what his profession was, he would answer that he was a farmer. And we think of him as the father of our country, the first president, General Washington, the leader of the Revolutionary Army. But he, in fact, would call himself a farmer. And Mount Vernon itself is a big farm. It's a big manor with a number of dependent farms around it. He actually was gifted a couple donkeys that show up in the book, Knight of Malta and King of what's the name here? I've forgotten. But in any case, the two donkeys that show up in the book are also gifts from the King of Spain and Marquis de Lafayette, and he bred them to his horses and was instrumental in breeding the mule, what we think of as a staple of the farm in America.
And it's very interesting also, Maggie, the ability that you had to help in the story process, to help in the character development of each of the characters. And it's a story that really kids can relate to. Have you gotten the opportunity, Linda, and I guess Maggie as well, to read the story in front of kids yet at schools?
Not yet, because actually the book has just arrived at Mount Vernon as of yesterday afternoon and now is available. Might I put in a plug at mountvernon.org. You can go to the shop and it will come up. And so it's available for purchase as of today. So we haven't been able to read it, but on the 27th of October, we will be at Mount Vernon for their fall family days. And they open up the doors to Mount Vernon, and we're going to have two readings and signings that day to kind of premiere the book. And then, of course, we're going down to the Miami Book Fair to present it, and we have some book tours in mind.
So, Linda, have you written any other books? Is this your first children's book, or you've been an author for
it's
other
my
ones?
My first children's book. I did a lot of writing for art magazines. I'm an artist, and so I wrote about did some travel pieces and for a few art articles. And I wrote a novel that has never been published. I've written a couple screenplays yet to be produced. And this is the first one that I see in a hard copy, which is really kind of wonderful.
And I guess that's where Maggie got the love for art through you, Linda. Isn't that right, Maggie? You developed the love for art through your mother.
Yeah. Well, and her father as well. Her father is quite a renowned artist from Mississippi.
Okay, so a really good background in art and creativity, and I guess that with homeschooling, you have that opportunity to really do it much more in that type of process. So, Linda, are you planning on having a sequel to this book? Is there any thoughts of continuing the story of George Washington? Because, again, we know how important stories of George Washington, the cherry tree, now you're kind of making up some new ones for kids to talk about.
Absolutely. Well, yes. In fact, we left it as the Mount Vernon's Magnificent Menagerie is on the spine without Anne the Very Mysterious Guest. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking this could be the beginning of a series, taking a singular story out of George Washington's history and weaving true events from the animals around it. I also am working on outlining some other historical characters that had very interesting animals in their lives that either were in the White House or were some of our founding fathers. And so I'm doing the research on those right now, and I hope to see those in print in the next few years.
All right. Well, fantastic. Really good story about what you were able to do. And I think that the whole thing that anytime George Washington is mysterious in a lot of ways. With the cherry tree, now that kids can talk about the animals. And that's going to be something I'll have to tell my daughters. By the way, did you know that George Washington grew up with many, many different animals? And I guess this is an honor, this interview as well, that we did lose our cat this week, and we had to euthanize her. She was really, really sick. And now I can tell the kids, by the way, did you know that George Washington grew up with a lot of animals and had a love for animals? So what a tremendous story. And I definitely do see a possibility for a sequel down the line and more opportunities to read write more and more books and be a children's book author, Linda, which I don't think you really thought was going to happen ever, did you?
It's a turn of events for me that I'm very pleased to see happen. And I'd like to say that Mount Vernon, this mysterious guest, I guess I can give it away, this mysterious guest that shows up at the end of the book is actually a camel that George Washington brought to Mount Vernon in 1787 for the holiday season. And so in concordance with that, Mount Vernon today brings a camel on the day after Thanksgiving and through January 6th and keeps a camel at Mount Vernon for the children to see. So if children are going to go to Mount Vernon, I encourage them to get there this fall when it's really beautiful. Visit the place, get interested in history. They've got an incredible museum. And see all the animals that are there on his farm.
All right. Where can we find more information on you, Linda and Maggie, and find out where we can purchase the book and also your website, Linda?
Oh, okay. The book can be purchased at MountVernon.org, and what this goes to the shop right there on that website, and it's there. You can buy it online. At this point, that's the only place that it can be purchased, but that will be changing. It'll be available at the Miami Book Fair and then to a broader audience. My website is LynnBurgess.com if you'd like to see my art.
And my website, if you'd like to see my art besides illustrations, is MaggieDunlap.com.
All right. Well, thanks again for calling the program. And Linda, when you have another book out, and if Maggie, if you're illustrating another book, we'll definitely have you on the show again, because the education talk is definitely for children's book authors to come on and talk about what they're doing. And it was fantastic to have a conversation with you, and I appreciate you guys calling.
Oh, thank you so much.
That's very nice. Thank you so much, Neil.
All right, take care now. Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay.
You're listening to the Total Education Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Show on the Total Education Network. Remember, go to my website, TotalTutor.org, for more information. Wow. Such a great show so far, but always excited to welcome my co-host to the program. Jared, how are you?
I'm doing okay, but I'm sure our listeners can hear that I am battling a cold. So I'll do my best to get through the show and certainly not pass this on to anybody else.
Well, let's hope not. And I'm starting to get one, too. And I have another hour of education talk after this interview with the Total Education Hour recording. And I'm sure our conversation with standardized tests will be quite interesting that you'll get to listen to on Friday live on WRCT. But let's kind of go right to, I guess, finally the next part on the sleep process. We're kind of getting those kids to sleep, but we're still battling. And then sometimes kids just say, no way, I'm not going to bed. We've tried everything, and guess what? Everything has failed. What do we do now?
Well, you know, certainly you hope that this doesn't become a pattern or something that is consistently showing itself. That's why you've been practicing this from the time that your child was an infant, moving all the way up into the toddler years, so that when it comes time to have your child actually go to their bedroom, turn off the lights, that they're willing to participate with that. So it's certainly a process that starts from the very beginning, and you continue to work through it. But certainly children have their own agendas. There could be a number of reasons why a child would refuse to go to sleep. We touched in past sessions about how it's difficult for a child to actually say goodnight to their parents and not see them for the rest of the day. With an older child, it could actually be something else. It could be school-related. It could be friendship-related. I mean, there could be a whole host of emotional and kind of social conflicts or challenges that they're facing.
Well, exactly, Jared, and I agree completely with you on that situation, is that you could literally look at a situation where that the kids just are battling. They want to be with their parents. They don't want to go to bed, and that's hard, right?
Absolutely. And again, you know, I remind parents that many ways this is a kind of a compliment to them as mom and dad, as the caregivers, that their child wants to be, wants to be up and around them. Again, certainly, I often tell parents, follow your instincts. You've been practicing this for a while. Continue to persevere. Some nights you may need to stay in the room with your child. If they're an older child, 6 or 7 years of age, there might be some questions that you can ask them that can help the parent understand what your child is actually going through. The other side of that is if they're younger, just being in that room a little bit longer may be just the comfort that child needs to kind of get back into the bedtime ritual.
Oh, absolutely. And get back in that bedtime ritual is key, right, Jared? We have to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's what we do every night with my son. We have a whole routine that is associated with bath time, a snack of yogurt or fruit, a very short book that we look at together. Some evenings we permit him to watch a little bit of television. For a lot of kids, television can kind of almost overstimulate them. For our son, we have found that it really is a way to help bring him down.
And that sounds like that to me too, Jared, to bring him down and to calm him down. Bath time, story time, these things get them calm. And if you don't stick to a routine every night, then the kids are just not going to feel safe to go to bed.
Yeah, you know, not feel safe. They themselves won't know what to expect. I mean, it really is important to stay within that routine. Children, we all know that children seem to have that built-in alarm clock that wakes them up every day at 6:30 in the morning. For some kids, a little bit earlier. For other children, a little bit later. But the same idea holds true, though, for helping your child prepare for bedtime. You know, there is kind of almost that built-in clock that they themselves begin to recognize that it's time to shut out the lights, close our eyes, and take a rest for the rest of the night.
Exactly, Jared. And finally, that they'll go to sleep, which is a challenge beyond belief to get kids to sleep. I mean, it's something that you continue to wish upon. So all those strategies, if it doesn't work, sleep in the same room with them till they fall asleep. But what if we still have this battle? What other things can we look at that maybe might be the cause of this?
Well, I mean, certainly there could be, again, a variety of issues. Again, with an older child, it could be more of a social situation or even an emotional circumstance that they're facing. Again, being with your child in the bedroom towards the end of the evening gives parents a chance to kind of examine that, get a feel for it. It could be that the child is not getting enough activity during the day. That's a great way to, you know, having your child really be active during the day is a great way to kind of guarantee that your child is going to be nice and tired by the end of the day, end of the evening. So activity is another situation that can be looked at. And then I always ask parents to look at nutrition. What are they providing for their child at dinner time? What are they providing for their child towards the end of the evening? You know, certainly we know we really kind of know now that sugar does play a very important role in stimulating the child, activating the child's energy level, not for a prolonged period of time, but for very short bursts. So if the child is getting perhaps too much sugar towards the end of the evening, carbohydrates towards the end of the evening, those are actually foods that will provide that child with a short but intense energy boost.
Another thing is, what if they still take naps when they shouldn't? It just keeps them, makes them very, it's very difficult for them to go to bed.
Well, that's exactly right. But that's not a problem in my house. My son he stopped taking a nap by the time he was 2 years of age. So we do not experience that. Now, I do expect as he gets a little bit older and his energy level decreases as he moves towards the older early childhood years and reaches more towards adolescence, that, yeah, his metabolism will start to slow down and he will be tired at the end of the school day. But in our house, taking a nap has never really been an issue.
Well, that must mean that Michelle never had any rest, and you didn't have any rest at that time if you were home.
Oh, there's no question about that. But for us, it actually has worked out well. But that's an important part. Yeah, if your child is, if you have the 6-year-old, 7-year-old who's coming home from school, taking a nap, even a short nap, that absolutely is going to push back that bedtime at night.
So with the time remaining, I have a couple questions. If I have issues with the sleep and say, what do I do, Jared? Because I think this is a great part of the book for our next book, is kind of Q&A really quickly before we run out of time, maybe two questions. One would be, what if a situation occurs where literally you go get them in the bed, they just run away, they're gone. What would you do?
This is actually something I do face with parents. And again, we go back to the strategy that I've supplied with parents of when you've transitioned from the toddler, or from the crib to the toddler bed, spend 5 minutes in the room with your child. If they get out of bed without, you know, I don't want to go into great detail and necessarily bore our listeners, but put the child right back into bed, but really try to limit the interaction that you have with your child during that. Put them back to bed. Do your best to ignore the really frustrating behavior of having to do that. Once you walk out of that room for 5 minutes, I've suggested to parents whose children really do this, stay right by the door. And when your child goes to that door, put them right back into bed. Don't start the 5-minute clock over again. But again, you can win this behavior with your child. Your child will give up. They will recognize that you know, this is bedtime. For some children, it comes very easily. For other families, that they really face great difficulties. But the important thing is that child will not necessarily give up. I don't want to use it like that, but will understand that it's time to go to bed.
And that is important. We all know it's important because we all need our sleep. And we all need our kids to get their sleep because at one point they're going to go to school. And if they're not getting the rest that's needed, then there'll be a lot of issues later on, right?
Well, I mean, we know that just for brain development, the science has shown this. The research has provided strong evidence about this, particularly with young children, infants and toddlers. The 10 to 12 hours of sleep at night and the 2 to 3 hours of a nap, you're looking at you know, minimum of 11 hours for a 24-hour period of sleep and rest. You know, it really is critical for brain development. It allows the brain to rest. It allows the brain to rejuvenate itself, and it really is critical. This is not the kind of thing where we're looking at, you know, Albert Einstein needing 4 hours of sleep at night. I'm sure that Albert Einstein as an infant and toddler slept more than 4 hours a night.
I didn't know that Albert Einstein only slept 4 hours, Jared. So I'm in great company then.
There's a history of geniuses who are insomniacs. So, you really are, and you are really keeping great company, Neil. But I bet as an infant and toddler you slept more than 4 hours a night.
Oh yeah, I definitely did. And thanks again for calling the program, Jared. But I'm going to throw that at people. And when did Einstein die? How old was he?
Oh my gosh, I know he was old. I don't know. Maybe he was older, I should say.
So let's throw out every medical term of not getting any sleep. Jared, thanks again for calling the program. That was a great trivia thing to end it, and we'll put that in the book. Take care, and we'll talk soon, all right?
Okay, bye, Neil.
All right, bye. All right, that was Jared. You're listening to the Told Education Show on the Told Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. And I tell you, great education talk tonight. And I've got to go to the website, totaltutor.org, for more information. And we'll be back in just a moment.